I mean, your intestinal fortitude, assuming you still have your intestines, are...
I don't, actually. That's I'm missing a large intestine.
Well, there you go.
The secret's out.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Welcome to Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. You may know me as the author of The Little Red Book of Selling. And to my right is...
Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And together we are going to help you sell more, earn more, bank more, and have a better time at selling, because that's what it's all about.
That's right, Jeffrey. And today we have an amazing episode.
We do?
We do. Our guest today is Scott Lees.
Yes.
And he's going to talk about leadership, management, sales. He is going to give you a wealth of knowledge.
He's a good guy. And he's a very interesting fellow because he almost was not with us.
That is correct.
And he's going to talk about getting healthy, staying healthy, kicking bad habits. And I think he's going to talk about startups.
I think he will, too.
You know, I've always been intrigued about startups because the people that start them up normally have a passion for something like a better widget or a better bicycle tire or a computer program or some kind of a widget. And then they get it and the passion's there and they've raised family money or they've done whatever and they don't know how to sell it.
Yeah. So I was in a large networking group in New York City where I noticed this trend of amazing people who were brave to go out on their own, create their own business, and think that I have this amazing product or this amazing service, and now everyone's just going to show up.
Yeah. If I build it, they will come.
Right.
Let me give you a clue. It's a movie. And not too many people show up.
No. And people don't even know about you. And so part of that, you know, creating your startup is becoming known online, in person.
You don't have to actually sell, but you do have to create the atmosphere where people want to buy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's this fear, too, because a lot of these people don't like salespeople or selling.
Or they're uncomfortable selling.
Right. They don't want to come off as pushy.
Yeah.
And so then they become unconfident, if that's a word, or not confident.
Or disconfident.
They don't want to sell because they're afraid to.
Uh-huh.
And that creates a really big problem. You have this great product, but you're not selling it.
Well, and people go down. So that's why, in my opinion, anyone who's in a startup should have a coach
mm-hmm.
or some kind of person who's guiding them. And that's what Scott does. He's a startup coach.
Yeah, even the best sales coaches have coaches and mentors and people. I mean,
I do.
Of course, everyone who wants to grow and improve finds a coach.
It's interesting. I get asked questions by I open my audience up to questions if I have enough time. I only take them in writing. But oftentimes someone will say, who's your mentor?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand how to get the mentor. And so I'm going to give you an example and we can just sort of play from there. I read Swim with the Sharks by Harvey McKay in the early 90s. And it impacted me significantly. I'm very significant. So much so that when the sales Bible was completed, I went to his publisher to get my book published and I got it.
Wow.
But in the middle, Harvey came with Ken Blanchard to town. I was writing my column in the paper and I introduced him, but I had already written a column about him beforehand. So now he comes to town. Thousands of people have already known that he's existed. I have extolled his virtues, and we became friends first, and he became my mentor second. And how long? That was in 1993, so that was we're pushing 25 years on that, and he calls me all the time still.
Yeah.
To this day, he called me three
that
years ago.
That is so cool. Hey, Harvey, if you're listening to our show—
Yeah, we want you on
We
our
want
show.
You on as a guest.
So we'll send you that little clip.
Going back to the startup conversation, though, for the entrepreneur, is there a bad assumption sometimes that, oh, this thing that I'm passionate about, that I love, is so good,
it
will sell itself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly correct.
I don't know things that do sell themselves.
Well, in the mind of the entrepreneur, in the mind of the startup person, that's what they think. Otherwise, they wouldn't be that passionate about it.
So popsicles on a hot day. That's about the only thing sells itself.
Exactly.
Or lemonade, right. Free lemonade will sell itself. but the challenge that that entrepreneur has is, suppose it doesn't, then what?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at it that there's no panacea in the world. There's no free lunch. There's no, you know, all the things that you think are going to happen will not. And in the startup world, and you can ask anybody from Jobs and Bezos all the way down to the guy down the street, they thought it was going to be something that it turned out not to be. And you have to be able to roll with those punches and in the meantime, make enough sales to survive.
The one amazing thing or two amazing things that entrepreneurs have going for them in sales that they don't even realize that they have is a deep belief system in their product. You would not, if you're an entrepreneur, you don't risk everything. You don't quit your job, take no pay, figure out how to create something. If you don't have deep belief that whatever you're going to offer is going to be a great success.
I can promise you that for every story you hear about the guy that quit his job and went out on faith and made it, mm-hmm. there's 1,000 that did not.
For sure. But that belief is fundamental in selling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of entrepreneurs don't even realize that they have that deep belief. And
right.
so
they refer to it as passion.
Right.
Or I'm excited about this.
Right.
When in fact it's a belief.
Right. And the next step for them is then transferring that belief to the customer.
And many people are not capable of that kind of communication. It's a special kind of communication that you could probably get on the Get 'Em or Learn 'Em Academy if you decide to subscribe.
I bet you could. I bet you could.
If you decide to subscribe to it. But that's we don't have room for commercials today. We want to get right to Scott.
Well, before we get to Scott, Jeffrey, let's talk about the new economy.
Okay.
All right. What's going on out there? What are you seeing?
It's going crazy. Let me go back for just one second.
Sure.
I belong to the National Speakers Association. There are 4,000 members. A small percentage of them make most of the money. But the bottom line is this. When the economy took a hit, most of the people who were involved in that organization didn't make it. They couldn't pivot fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
They were motivational speakers. They were after-dinner speakers, and no one wanted them anymore. They had to talk about something specific, and they had to talk about something that was customized for the audience. Luckily for me, I'd always been a customized speaker, so my business survived and flourished. However, the people who are in any business when it starts to change have to understand where the pivot is. The taxi company did not. The
right.
Yellow Pages did not. Rolodex did not. 1 Hour Photos did not. And mm-hmm. and the daily newspaper did not.
Right.
So there has to be an opportunity in your industry, in your business, in your town, whoever, you know, the diehards that are listening today, the market, the new economy is changing things. People are buying stuff at midnight and department stores are closing. Department stores that have been there for 100 years are closing. Mm-hmm. And not like one in your town, like thousands of them are closing
mm-hmm.
because the retail environment has changed. So if you're looking to begin a business, any business, and you don't have an online component, you're a dead duck. And
You have an extreme specialty that people are coming to you for.
Even if you go to Ace Hardware at the Park Road Shopping Center, mm-hmm. which is an amazing—
Yep, Black Hawk.
Yeah,
yep.
They have an online presence.
Of course.
So yeah, maybe Suarez Bakery— because you got to go down to the bakery to pick stuff up. They're not going to send it to you. And you have to buy it on that day. But the bottom line is everybody's online.
Yes. And they're buying online.
You look like you want to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that I think you, and you tell me if this is a fair statement or not. I think you've seen the economy rise and fall over the decades. And in fact, on Get 'Em or Learning Academy, you can find clips for when the economy is poor, how to adjust your sales methods, and when the economy is doing well. But you've seen these ebbs and flows. But I think what's different now is that the economy is both improving but also changing. So there are still winners and losers amongst this economic boom.
The winners are getting sophisticated, more sophisticated, and the losers are refusing to change. And it's almost like you can go back and read Death of a Salesman, and it should be Death of a Business.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I may have something there.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. I'm going to write that down.
All right, cool. Well, while you're writing that down, Jeffrey, a lot of people think that when the economy is in an upswing, now is the time to capture your clients, but not focus on yourself, not focus on your education, because, well, sales are just coming in, so I don't need to get any smarter. I don't need to get any better.
We have all the sales we need. Listen, I've heard that expression so many times from so many broke businesses. It's not even funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now is the time when the economy is doing well to double down on your education efforts, read something extra, watch something extra, because that's how you're going to take it to the next level.
And you have to have the passion about it. Speaking of now is the time, go back and watch the I Have a Dream speech mm-hmm. by Martin Luther King, and you'll find it to be the most inspirational speech of all time. And he used, now is the time. And whenever somebody says it, it like rings in my ears.
How many times have you watched that speech?
100 minimum.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Every year on his birthday, for sure.
I know. It's a family tradition now.
It is. But I look at it from a standpoint that I'm the speaker. I'm the guy who's in front of that. I'd like to be in front of 500,000 people. I'd like to have a speech like that to, you know, to be a champion of a specific cause and you know, make it right. But you have to look at what the pressure on that guy was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was speaking for an entire race of people and a movement, and it was just unbelievable. And he pulled it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he absolutely pulled it off. It's a 14-minute speech where he doesn't say, I have a dream, until the 10th minute or 11th minute.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is cool. So let's go back to education. Do you have any tips for our diehards on how they can better educate themselves?
Online, on your phone, is the new way to become educated or read a book.
It seems like almost the only way nowadays.
Well, now you can still read a book, but I...
Oh, 100%. I love books.
But most people read their book on a Kindle or on a Kindle app. The smartest thing Kindle did, by the way, was made their app free and put it anywhere.
By the way, for the record, I like holding a book.
Yeah, I like holding a book too.
There's something about it that's so different than turning the page on the Kindle.
But I don't want to hold 10 books on an airplane. I'd rather take my iPad and open up my Kindle app.
I know, but how often do you really need 10 books at a time?
I don't know. It depends. It's what's in my Kindle library. So I'll like pick a book I haven't read yet and crank on it for an hour in the plane.
Yeah.
So anyway, but how do they get that education? They read or they study or they go online or they figure it out. The best way, the secret to this whole process is go visit your customers and find out why they bought. Go visit your customers and find out how they use. And I promise you, the education you get there in a day will eclipse a month worth in a classroom.
Okay, so your challenge this week, diehards, is to go visit 3 customers and find out why they bought.
Bingo.
Love it.
Now, let's get to Scott.
Let's do it.
Scott Lease is one of the top startup sales leaders in the country. His near-death experience with illness led him to discover sales and startups, where he achieved success using the dedication, process, and drive to compete that he had honed as a multi-sport athlete and through the fight to take back his health. Lease is the founder of Scott Lease Consulting, LLC, and serves as a senior vice president of sales for Qualia Labs and serves as a strategic advisor to a number of startups across the globe. His first book, Addicted to the Process, was released in May and is available on Amazon. Please help me welcome the great Scott Lease. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
How's it going
Welcome.
Out there in California?
I'm actually in Austin today. I'm doing great, though. I'm in Austin today, not in San Francisco for once.
Got ya. And I'm assuming that you told us briefly that you were just surfing out in Costa Rica. What's that like?
It was gorgeous. It was about 80 degrees every single day and nice 2 to 3 foot waves. Went there with my family and another family that we're friends with. Took the kids, got them surfing. It was great.
So is that like one of those endless summer movies from the 60s?
Yes, actually. Robert August, who's one of the guys in that endless summer movie, the first time I ever went to Tamarindo, he was there. And it was like a total starstruck moment for me and some of my friends just to chat with him. So that would be a big goal of mine one day is to replicate that movie.
That's cool.
That's cool.
What would you call it? Endless sales?
sure.
I love it.
So okay, Jeffrey mentioned in the introduction that you had a near-death experience, and I know that I've heard some near-death experience stories, and the thing that I've always heard is it changes someone's life. And can you tell us about your experience, what happened, and what how it's changed your life or impacted you?
Yeah, sure. I was going to grad school at the time. I had just turned 23 years old, and all of a sudden just started having really serious health problems. Led me to basically be in the hospital, multiple different hospitals, for the better part of 4 years straight. I had a lot of surgeries, a lot of procedures, all sorts of things that you don't want done and don't want to hear about. The recovery process was brutal. I was missing organs and all sorts of just brutal things. Got pumped full of narcotics during that experience for all those years. And once I was done healing from the illness, I had to get off all the drugs because I was a drug addict at that point in time. And some of the surgeries were, you know, kind of straight from the movies. Like, we got to get this guy into the operating room right now. It's not going to make it, kind of thing. And so, you know, I think you can probably go one of two ways. You can go through things like that and use that as an excuse the rest of your life and just kind of wallow in all the pain forever, or you can use it to fuel you and motivate you moving forward. And you get a good appreciation of how fragile life is and, you know, the limited opportunities that we might have. And so we better pour ourselves all into that.
So you obviously had choices when you left that hospital, and your choice was to go on the methadone program or kick it and get to a point in your life where it was meaningful.
Well, I actually went cold turkey, to be honest with you, against doctor's orders. They told me that was a really bad idea, and I just really didn't care. I was at a place where 2-3 weeks of hell was nothing when I'd already been through 4 weeks of 4 years of hell.
Exactly.
So I got through that part pretty quick. And then, you know, I had no background in business or sales or anything like that. I had a psychology degree in college. I had a minor in religious studies. My master's degree is in learning and instructional technology, just nothing to do with, you know, sales. And so I had to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life. And I picked sales very strategically because it was the only thing I could think of where I could kind of make up for lost time. And, you know, I played 2 sports in college, and I'm a very competitive person. And the idea that if I worked hard enough and I succeeded, I got paid more than somebody else, resonated with me. You know, as an athlete, if you don't perform, you get cut, and it is what it is. So I understood that part, and I thought that it might be a good arena for me to get into. And luckily for me, it's worked out pretty well.
So how did you get from being a sales guy to being a startup guy?
Well, I went straight to a startup, actually. That's where I got my sales career kicked off. I wanted to do that because I didn't fancy myself somebody who was going to be, you know, kind of a frontline entry-level worker for very long. So I wanted to go in, prove that I could sell, and then move into leadership position, you know, as fast as possible. And I figured that a very early stage startup was my best chance to do that.
And now you consult with other startups?
I do. Yeah. It's something that I've done for a few years, but really in the last year and a half, it's picked up, and I, you know, form my own company around it. And I really enjoy it. It keeps me fresh, you know, in terms of what kind of new technologies are out there, keeps me practiced and versed in selling to different type of industries and buyer profiles. Excuse me. It allows me the chance to, you know, kind of work with others and coach and mentor and give advice. And it's also good for, you know, networking purposes. I've built some good relationships in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. I'm really starting to kind of take myself more and more that direction.
So when you consult with a startup, what kinds of things are you thinking about and finding that they aren't thinking about?
Well, number one, I think people try to overcomplicate their product. You know, I think people who build products spend a lot of time thinking about every single feature, every single thing that this product can do. and they're so excited about it, you just want to explain it to anybody who will listen. Mm-hmm. But not everybody buys that way. You know, I tell the story when I consult with people, like, I'm not a car person at all. Okay, so when I go to the car lot, I care about like the color, the safety for my kids, miles per gallon, and that's about it. So if the car salesman comes over to me and starts talking to me about all these different parts and the engine size and all this kind of stuff, he lost me. Like, I don't care about all that kind of stuff. And so I find that a lot of sales orgs, especially at the very beginning when they don't really have a good defined process yet, they just overcomplicate things, you know? And so I like to work with them to simplify and really get down to the core of, you know, what problem are they solving for their potential customer? And why is that problem important? And how does their solution fix it?
On a personal level, do you charge by the hour or by the job?
I don't charge by the hour. I can't stand like admin paperwork kind of stuff. I don't want to track it, to be honest with you. So I just don't. I like to do, you know, right now, because I have a full-time job as the senior vice president of sales at a company called Qualia. I don't really have the time to travel around the country or the world and go in and, you know, meet with people for a couple of days straight and do jobs and things like that. So I started doing a lot of, you know, strategic advisory roles. Some of those involve equity. Most of them involve, you know, cash. And so it's just kind of by the job, I suppose, much more than hourly, which I can't handle. I'm not a good admin guy.
You talked about most of these startups don't have a defined process. And yeah. Your book, Addicted to the Process, is all about process as well. So what are some of the key factors and some of your strategies that go into play when you're building a process?
Well, the first thing that I need to do is I need to understand what problem the prospect has that they need to get solved. And that's going to be very different, obviously, depending on the industry and the product. Then I need to understand why that problem is important to fix. And I need to understand how I can create some urgency to fix that problem. And then I work with the team to simplify their solution in such a way that it doesn't overwhelm the prospect. And that's like the core for me of the process, is find pain, build value, create urgency, discuss your solution. So that's the very first thing that I try to do. And I like the consistency and the repetition. You know, again, as an athlete, we all have like idiosyncrasies. You know, you put your right shoe on first, or if you're a baseball player or you watch baseball, you see the guys, you know, mess with their batting gloves and their helmet and tap the plate. It's all rhythm and consistency. And so that's what I want the teams that I work with to develop. I want them to do it, you know, relatively the same way over and over and over and over again until it becomes, you know, much more natural.
An athlete doing practicing their skill. But I want to ask you, from a perspective of your athletic background, would you rather hire a salesperson that was an athlete, or would you find that the startup companies that you work with that have athletes in their management system respond better to your way of thinking?
Well, the first part is I love hiring former athletes, 100%. Team sports, individual sports, doesn't matter. I like the fact that they've, you know, disciplined themselves. They've worked extremely hard to become good at that particular sport. They've competed. They know how to win. More importantly, they know how to lose and how to forget about the loss so they can get ready for the next game. But I would not say that people who come from an athletic background, you know, respond better or worse to me than other people do.
But certainly they're coachable.
Well, not every athlete is extremely coachable.
well, but, let me put it this way. They all have coaches.
Yeah, they all have coaches. Yes. They all have coaches. Yeah, I think you just got to – I try to find people who want to learn and want to grow. that's a big, big deal to me. I'm not the type of sales leader that is looking to hire some, you know, superstar who thinks they knows it all and wants to be left alone. That's just not my thing. That's not what I do. I like to feel like I'm making an impact on people. I like people who are, you know, thirsty for knowledge and want to improve and, you know, want to steal my job and do what I do one day. I mean, that's kind of my goal, is to make myself obsolete, you know? So if I just want to help people get to wherever it is they're trying to go. And I find that athletes have been, you know, really receptive to that. And I think that people who were not athletic can tap into that competitiveness as well. There's certainly plenty of excellent people in the sales world who are not athletic.
And so how big is your team at Qualia?
Right now it's about 20. I started a year ago with 3. And so we've moved decently fast. I've got 20 on the sales side. The company is about 80 or so, I think, right now. We've got an office in San Francisco that's product and engineering, and we've got all of sales and customer success out in Austin where I live.
And as the SVP of sales, what's your secret to managing these salespeople? What's your secret to inspiring them?
Yeah, give us the sauce.
I mean, the secret to managing, I just try to make their jobs easier. So what I want is for them to bring me all the barriers that they have, all the reasons that they can't, work harder or get more output, or why they can't get deals across the line, or why meetings are not sticking, or, you know, how
they
can
sound
we make
like
our
excuses to me.
Yeah, they might be, but if I can eliminate those excuses one by one by one, not only is our team, in my estimation, going to improve, going to get better, but their excuses disappear, you know? And so I don't have to listen to them as much. So, and I push people pretty good. You know, I'm the type of person that, you know, you might have your best month ever, and probably 5 minutes later, after I give you a big congratulations, I'm going to be poking you a little bit, trying to figure out how we can do that much better next time, you know, and reminding you of where you were before and where you are now and where you want to go. And,
well, that's a sales manager's job, isn't it?
Yeah.
To better your best.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish every sales leader, whether they're vice president or director or sales manager, kind of operated that way. I've heard a lot of, horror stories, so to speak, you know, where people are just not getting coached and developed at all and don't have much interaction with somebody who's in a leadership position. And that's definitely not my style. You know, I sit on the floor with everybody. I've got an open calendar. I mean, I want people coming to me. I want people asking me for help. I want to edit, you know, email cadences and responses that people are thinking about sending. And I want to hop on calls and help people close deals and push things across the line. It's a lot easier to do that kind of stuff, I find, in early stage organizations, which is where I've spent the better part of my career. I mean, every job I've ever had really is getting a company off the ground from sort of zero to, you know, 100 million or so. That is the fun part for me. And then things on my end, things tend to change sometimes when you get around 400 or 500 people in the organization.
Yeah,
I spend my
politics.
Day in
yeah,
meetings
they definitely
and politics. And,
I've been
yeah.
there.
I don't, you know, I don't want to have a meeting for 45 minutes about what kind of snacks we're going to order for the office.
Exactly.
I don't care.
Let's go back for just a little bit. Obviously, you're doing sales leadership training and coaching right now. Were your coaches, when you were playing athletics, were your coaches impactful to you?
A couple of them were. You know, the number one person would be my dad. I mean, my dad is like the winningest high school girls soccer coach in Northern California, like above Sacramento.
Wow.
Ever.
So and, you could have a social life and get coached at the same time.
Yeah. My dad played college soccer back, you know, before it was in vogue. He went to Niagara University in Niagara
in
Falls,
Buffalo.
New York. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And yeah, so, you know, he coached my brother and I when we were little, and I've just watched him. I mean, he still coaches. He's 70 years old now. And I've just watched him for years and decades just dedicate himself to, you know, getting better, to making his teams better, to having an impact on, you know, the kids' lives and that he's worked with. And, you know, it's just
that's great to have that kind of.
He's been a big inspiration. And then in college, I had a couple coaches that I got along with really well that, you know, kind of inspired me. My soccer coach, his name was John Brooks at Dominican University, and he was deaf. And, you know, just watching how he kind of overcame things and how he thought about things, we got along really, really well. So, yeah, the coaches can make a big difference. On the flip side of that, I've had a couple coaches that weren't that great. And so I know the downside. So I feel fortunate to have had some of the people in my life that I've had.
Sometimes you have to see or have a bad coach in order to know what a really good coach is.
Yeah, but I'm sure those experiences are helping you as a coach, right?
I mean, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I've had some people that I've worked with over the years that, you know, knowing what I know now, I would never work with again. And so I'm much better prepared now as I, you know, figure out who I want to work alongside or who I want to hire or who I want to work for. Those are skill sets that, you know, me at 40 now wishes I could go back and teach me at 27 when I was first getting into the workforce. So, but I'm glad I went through those things.
But let's put this together. You were an athlete. You were coached well. You had a death experience or a near-death experience, and you recovered. You beat a drug addiction, and you're, you know, missing a liver or whatever you're missing. And you have won in that environment. That's amazing. I mean, your intestinal fortitude, assuming you still have your intestines, are...
I don't, actually. I'm missing a large intestine.
Well, there you go.
The secret's out.
So, we couldn't tell, actually.
Yeah. Your secret's safe with us and about another 25,000 people. But I think that what you have to realize here is that all of these things combined make you a wonderful coach because you've been through the shit of what other people have never experienced.
So what do you tell someone when they're struggling?
Honestly, it depends what they're struggling with. You know, one of the things that I've really kind of hung my hat on over the years is working with people that everybody else has kind of rejected. You know, I've worked with people who were felons that I've helped turn their life around, and now they make, you know, low to mid six figures and they're in leadership positions. And I've worked with Lord knows how many addicts and alcoholics and people who've had bad relationship experiences. And so, you know, depending on my relationship with somebody on my team, you know, I can get into some of the deep, you know, shit that doesn't have necessarily to do with their day-to-day work, but is, you know, impacting them and how they think. And so I try to get in there and start to reprogram and rewire the way that they think about things. And if I can do that, you know, I find that they become much more receptive to actual, you know, on the job kind of skill set training, you know. So I look at my job is to make you a better person as well as a salesperson. And if I can do that, then, you know, I really think that I'll have made an impact on people. And if I do that enough times, then, you know, hopefully I'll win. Jeffrey told me I already won, but, you know,
you've
I don't
totally
feel that
won.
Way. I don't feel that way yet. You know, I got a lot more things that I want to do in a short amount of time that we're all here. So,
How often do you talk to your dad?
Candidly, not that much, you know, not because we don't have a good relationship. We have a really good relationship, but, you know, he's in California. He's been a professor at Chico State University for 40 years and he coaches, and he's, you know, kind of got a little bit of a workaholic gene that I've inherited. You know, and I'm 2 hours ahead of him in Austin, and I work for Qualia. I work for myself. I've, you know, done the book. I'm coaching my kids' little league teams and all this kind of stuff.
Are his courses online?
That's a good question. I don't know if they are. He's been an accounting. He's an accounting professor for 40 years, and we're very different in some ways, and very, very similar in others. He's a very risk adverse kind of guy, and I'm not that way at all.
But he was such an influence on you. It would seem as though in his 70s that you would want to at least counsel him just a little bit more about stuff.
Yeah. We mean, I don't want it to sound like we never talk, but.
I'm not the kind of person. Now.
I'm going to have to call him now.
I need to
prepare you, Dad, that everybody that listens to the podcast thinks we have a weird relationship. No, but we do fun stuff. You know, last year I took him to England for 10 days, just the two of us. And we went to a bunch of European soccer games, traveled around. And, we find ways to chat and spend time together. But neither one of us are the type of people that, you know, is dying to talk on the phone every single day for, you know, 30 minutes just to catch up. But I'll see him in a couple of weeks when we go back to California for Christmas.
So if people want to get a hold of you to find out where they can get your coaching or where they can get your startup advice, where would they go?
Well, I have a website, scottleeseconsulting.com. And I'm very active on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to try to find me.
Well, we wish you every success.
Well, thank you guys very much.
Was a great interview.
I like the fact that he is a pragmatic leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken all of his expertise and all of his life's experiences, which are pretty grim.
Yes.
I mean, you listen to a guy who's been through a death experience.
Near death.
Well,
this is sell or die, Jen, so it was near death. Let's just be clear there.
Sell or almost die.
That's a pretty definitive line.
Yeah.
Too. There's no.
Yeah.
Little
there's
gray
no
here.
Going
exactly.
back.
The line at that moment is flat, as they say.
Right.
But he talked about what he did as a leader and how he is rectifying his people's issues.
So he led how he wanted to be led, which is pretty cool. Most sales leaders out there, or not most, a lot of sales leaders out there are counters. They count your calls, they count your leads, they count your pipeline, they count your sales. They're counters. They're not actual leaders. They're managing.
And Scott, and my opinion is, we need to be counters. In other words, anytime someone asks you to count something, you have to counter that with real action. And what do you do not to measure the specific action that doesn't lead to a sale, but rather talk about what are the elements that actually make it happen. So counter.
I love that, Jeffrey.
In the beginning of our show, I challenge people to go visit their customers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way to counter, make 100 cold calls.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a customer's place, you find out why they bought, you find out who else wants to buy, and you go visit those three people.
Yeah.
And it's better than 1,000 cold calls.
Oh, 100%.
But the sales manager only knows what he or she knows from their own experience. If they've come up through the ranks and they've been there for 20 years, they don't understand from the internet or from social platforms or from a Kindle.
Yeah, but oftentimes the best salesperson becomes a sales manager without
any
training.
Experience.
Without any training. I mean, it happened to me, right? I was a great salesperson, became a sales manager, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, wow, this is a whole different skill set. I better go educate myself because I need to know how to manage people, not
right,
just
your company's
make sales.
Not, they didn't educate you.
Correct.
They did not give you leadership skills. If I was going to transition somebody from salesperson to sales manager, the first thing I would do is say, you're going to take 3 months of leadership training.
Oh, yeah.
And
no
then
way.
You're going to go out that and visit our customers, and then you can start to manage people.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. So you need to figure out pretty quickly when you're in that managerial seat exactly how to help your salespeople. And that's the key. Scott talked about, or maybe it was you that said, you need to figure out how to better your best.
So here's the deal on that. Unfortunately, there's a guy named Bill, and he is training America's salespeople. Guy gets hired, goes in for a week's worth of training,
mm-hmm.
comes out, and the manager says, I want you to work with Bill for a week because he's been here for 10 years.
Right.
And he knows everybody and he knows the ropes.
Yeah.
And the kid gets in the car with Bill first thing Monday morning, 8:00. And Bill turns around to the kid and says, let me tell you how things really work around here. Bill is slightly overweight, maybe 40, 50 pounds. He has been working for 20 years. He hates his job. He hates his boss. He's thinking about leaving, and he has his name posted up on some job site under a different name.
What does Bill smell like?
He smells like yesterday.
Like still coffee and cigarettes.
Man. Yeah.
Poor Bill.
So, and sometimes Bill will disguise you dressed as a nice person and dressed as someone who, you know, kind of looks the part, but he still hates what's going on.
Yeah.
So this is my final advice. If you're a leader and you're looking to get great salespeople, train them yourself. Take them with you on sales calls yourself. Make them a great person yourself, and then they'll definitely follow you.
There's also the other kind of Bill, the Bill that's actually really successful, and you trust that Bill is going to do a great job going out there with your people, but he sees you as the competition.
That's William.
Oh, that's his dad. And he doesn't want to help.
Well said.
He doesn't actually want to help because he wants to do better than you. He doesn't want to give you his knowledge.
Most the luck here falls that most sales leaders are paid based on the performance of their people, not on their own performance. And management has gotten smart about that and said, okay, you're going to get your bonus only if your people make their number.
Yep.
So now William is more encouraged to help his people or her people succeed.
Yeah, or the sales manager is more encouraged to make their people succeed. Right,
that was William.
No.
It was.
Okay.
Wasn't it William? It
was William. Bill. William was the helper.
Another kind of salesperson.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, he was like Bill. And instead of just hating his job, he loves his job. He's a go-getter. He does amazing. He's crushing his quota.
I got it.
But he wants to see the new guy.
He sees you
lose.
With the enemy.
He's threatened.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So you got to watch out. Basically, the point of all of that is to watch out for the minefield of players that could discourage you rather than encourage you.
The jealous ones or the stupid ones or the backstabbing ones.
Yeah, but it's so simple. Don't shirk your responsibility.
Right.
If you're a leader, go lead.
Right.
You know, why are you having your other people try to lead? They're not the leader.
Yeah, we just talked to someone. It's an interview that's going to be coming up, but Jacob Badsgaard, who talked about transitioning from founder to leader and how he got on the ground floor with his people.
And transitioning your founder mentality. And that's the key.
That was an aha moment for me that I've been looking at that at the notes that I took from that interview for the last week.
If this is the first episode you're listening to on Sell or Die, make sure you subscribe because that episode coming out is unbelievable and potentially life-changing for you as it was for Jeffrey.
I will tell you, we are now approaching the 50,000 downloaders a month. Number.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you're listening to this, it is March the 1st of 2018, because if you're listening 5 years from now, we'll probably be at 1 million. So I'm ecstatic about what the acceptance of this podcast has been, and it's growing, and with the help of our amazing producer, the great Doug Branson.
Oh, yeah. He makes us better every week, guys.
Exactly, and he comes
out
with— He is
our podcast coach.
He is William in the case of Bill. And it's helpful. I mean, I actually, like, we're Jen and I are sitting here, and we're discussing life and sales in the big city, and all of a sudden, Doug comes in, unannounced, and totally informed.
Howdy, y'all.
And he's been thinking about his response, and he nails it.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome. Okay, so guys, while we're on the subject of Sell or Die, I just want to let you know that we have ordered Sell or Die Hard mugs that are coming out.
Yeah, be a diehard. Get the mug. It's only $100. What are they?
No, they're not $100.
Oh, they're $20.
Yeah, they're like $20-something.
Okay.
And for a limited time only, we're going to be offering free shipping on the mugs. They are heavy, so they do cost a lot to ship. So all you need to do is go to sellordiepodcast.com to get your mug on pre-order. These are limited edition, and once we run out,
we've purchased under 1 million of them, and they will be collector's items in homes across the world. By the way, shipping is not free if the last three letters in your country are not USA.
That is correct. My bad. Shipping is only free to the US, but we will work with you if you're not in the US.
We'll only if you're out of the country, shipping is double.
No.
And that way we can make up for the— Oh, wait. No, we usually ship out of the country at cost.
Yeah.
And we are live on Facebook now.
Oh, yes, we're live on Facebook on Monday mornings.
Yep.
And if you just follow me and Jeffrey on Facebook, we'll announce when we're going live next for Motivation Monday.
Motivation Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
We got number 99 on our team, Momentum. and we are rocking with it.
Oh, man.
Aaron Judge.
All right. So I just want to take a minute to thank our sponsors, Death Wish Coffee. Death Wish is made from the world's most perfectly roasted beans. You can go get your bag of the world's best coffee.
And if you want to be a sponsor on the Sell or Die podcast program.
Hold on. Oh. You can go get your bag of the world's best coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
We're drinking it right now.
We are drinking it. We love it. We drink it all day long. If you've ever visited us, you know we legit drink this all day.
We had a breakfast meeting this morning and we used an entire bag.
Oh, gosh.
People were drinking, man.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so now, Jeffrey, go for it. Sponsors. Oh,
yeah, if you want to be a sponsor, just go to sellordie@gittimer.com and send us an email. Just put sponsor in the subject line and we will find you and relieve you of your credit card. In the nicest way possible.
All right, another shout out to Doug Branson, our producer.
Yep.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.